Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'll tell you what, Andrew. Even in a week where the football is not that compelling, there's still plenty to talk about in this game.
Always. Always. I am once again in a horrible mood. As we convene here for this podcast tonight, it will be fun though and therapeutic to talk about lots of Champions League to discuss as some clubs have seen their road come to an end. So we will talk about that and the clubs whose road continues, of course. A little bit later in the podcast, a little bit of CONCACAF Champions League, which I have enjoyed. Competition, I would say of all the things in my life from like 3 years ago to now or five years ago to now, If you asked me to name, like, what are the two things that have grown on you the most in that time, that competition might be number one on my list.
I love the way that the CONCACAF Champions League, almost every season in the early stages, barrels in and kind of just not, it's not even Leroy Jenkins. It's like that guy at the party that comes in and just destroys. Like, MLS is feeling so good about itself. It's in its first 2 weeks. Big deal with Apple. They're telling us all the stuff they're going to do. Global audience. Bah, bah, bah. We've got some of the best players. Messi could be coming. It's feeling itself.
Yeah.
And then in comes, like, Violet from Haiti.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like if we were in some... It's like if we were in some, like, coffee shop for, like, poets to come up and read their poetry. And then, like, all of a sudden, Artie Lang comes barreling through on stage.
Yeah. And just destroys it, like.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's great that we have this humbling mechanism for MLS. You know, because the last 2 weeks have been something else, you know, really, really pushing the league, as they should. And then a Haitian team that has won. It's not like, oh, you know what? They're they got a few internationals. They got one guy who's an international. One, I'm not sure because I couldn't find detail on them on Transfermarkt. They're there, but I can't find any real detail on them. Mm. I'm not sure, but they might be the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. They might all be just like regular dudes. And they monstered Austin. Well, we'll get to that.
It was madness. It was unbelievable.
One thing. Who would you say are the writers that I bring up most on this podcast to kind of discuss different issues? Journalists.
Probably. I don't know, actually.
It used to be Rory Smith.
Oh, really? Okay.
I did a fair amount of Miguel Delaney as well, who's just like, he's excellent too. But I met Ken Early.
Oh. See, it's funny because I don't even consider him a writer.
No.
To me, he's a podcaster. He's like a commentator.
That's true, but he does have a weekly column with the Irish Times, which is well read, I would imagine. But I met him last night. Second Captains were doing something at the Brass Monkey in New York on a super cold Tuesday night, and 10-year anniversary of them going independent, which kind of rang home with us a little bit, I would think. And and had a pint with him afterwards, and talked about everything from Russell Brand to Alex Jones to various football writers and everything in between. Just great conversation. Yeah, it was really cool. They say don't meet your heroes, but do meet them.
Okay, so in other words, ignore that and do meet them.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's very cool. I'm happy for you. And then at the end of this podcast, I don't want to burden people with it in the middle, because if I had to guess, I would say it only applies to maybe like 2% of our audience. But on your recommendation,
yes,
last week you recommended that I watch When Saturday Comes. One of our listeners, I wish I could give credit to who it was, but one of our listeners immediately reached out to me on Twitter, because I had said, where am I going to find this movie? It's not just a movie that's like, hey, Netflix is like, it's right there on the top heading of Netflix. No, like, I was like, I'll never see this. Well, right on Johnny on the spot, one of our listeners sent me a message on Twitter and said, hey, by the way, When Saturday Comes is available for free on YouTube. And I thought, you know what? I have the day off. My kids are in school. My wife's at work. I got nothing going on. Let's do it. And I did, and I took notes. And so at the end of the podcast, if people want to log off, that's fine. But for the people who have seen it that are curious for my thoughts and your thoughts, I have watched When Saturday Comes, and I'm ready to give it my review.
Awesome.
So that'll be at the end.
Right. And I should mention and remind me at the end, Jeff Kennedy, who is a listener of ours, is he works in film development.
Oh,
and he's got some notes to answer our question about why isn't football really ever taken to the cinema? Like, why are there so few good soccer movies, if any, really? Let's be honest. Okay. And he's got some notes on that. So hang about for that. And also, we've been sponsored by an interesting drug advert this week.
So, oh,
yeah, should probably listen to that later.
Huh?
Yeah.
Are you? Yeah. Why am I not aware of this?
You are aware. There's an advert for a specific drug that I think some of our listeners might want to take.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, color me intrigued. let's get into the Champions League, JJ.
Color me bored. Bored. Absolute dirge.
You want to take the wheel here and steer the ship? Where do you want to start? My gut tells me Bayern PSG, but if you want to go somewhere else, I'll follow your lead.
Let's start with what Karl Anka tweeted, which I just really agreed with me. Champions League isn't hitting the same way this year, and I'm wondering if I'm the problem. Maybe the World Cup affected my appetite. I actually don't think it was that. I just think the games weren't that good. So if you want to start with Bayern PSG, I'm happy to, because wow, just wow.
Yeah, here's my initial thought. Neymar or no Neymar, that team not being able to register a single goal over two legs, regardless of opponent, just cannot happen. For the amount of funds and resources that have been thrown into that front line. Meanwhile, Choupo-Moting, who they allowed to just walk out of there, he's scoring against them. Messi, Mbappe, zeros pretty much over the course of these two legs. A couple moments here and there. But it just, if you're PSG, and I know no one's going to have much sympathy for them for the way that they've been built and the money that they've poured into it and their ownership and all that. But if you're PSG and you are that ownership, you got to be looking at this thinking, what are we supposed to do? Like, where do we go from here?
I mean, it was so inept. It was so lax. They did have a couple of moments. I think
they should have scored. Matthias De Ligt made one of the it's when this Champions League is all said and done, we'll see who goes on to win it. Might be one of the underrated moments of the competition, clearing ball off the line. That was a sure thing goal.
When Sommer got pressured and the ball was given away, and then there was Messi driving through, and I think it's just one of those moments where you realize speed kills, and Alphonso Davies cleans him and gets the ball perfect. Like, it's a brilliant tackle. It's just a super tackle. And that was all about just like youth and speed and timing to get in there. But apart from that, they were just so blah. Mbappe was really nowhere. And Jamie Carragher in the post-match basically said, this guy, Mbappe, has got to leave this club. If he wants to go on to be in the real upper echelon of the greatest players we've ever seen. And look at, he has the talent. Mm-hmm. He has it, but in spades, bucket loads. He's got to leave PSG.
I agree. There will always be a ceiling for him as long as he stays at that club in terms of the way he's viewed by the fans around the world. There just will be. You know, he could go to that league, score 60 goals in a season, and people will say, yeah, but look where he's doing it. It's just, there's no achievement he can reach playing there that will allow him to cross a certain threshold and be there with the ranks of some of the other all-time greats. We know he's capable of it because we've seen him do it internationally multiple times across multiple tournaments. We've seen him do it in various Champions Leagues. But if he's not doing it consistently week in, week out in one of, I'd say, two or three leagues, the Premier League, La Liga, I'd give him the Bundesliga as well. I don't know. Not that I see him going to Inter. Would Serie A cut it for you? I don't know.
I don't think so.
But, you know, I agree. I think he's got to go. And it all, we can, I guess there's no sense in dancing around it. It's really the biggest thing. Like, if you want to analyze the game, we can. But for me, the biggest thing coming out of it is just sort of what I led off this portion of the podcast with. It's just, if you're PSG, what happens next? Because it feels, you know, Messi is out of contract this summer, and the rumors are running rampant that he could be headed over here potentially to MLS. You know, I still think that there's great football in him, but he's getting to that age. He's not, you know, as great as he was at the World Cup, asking him to do it week in, week out in Europe. He's getting to that point where it's going to be tough.
He can do it in Ligue 1, but like the team that's around him, it probably needs a complete rebuild. Like that side, like Neymar is seriously injured. Again, Mbappe is not really happy, it seems, and hasn't been since he signed a contract that we thought was going to give him like huge control over selection of managers and selection of players and everything since he was, quote unquote, given the keys to the club.
And by the way, even if it was within PSG's control, like those guys may want to leave. Messi's out of contract. He may leave. Mbappe's not happy. He may demand to be transferred to Real Madrid or wherever. But like, even if those things weren't true, if you're PSG and you look at the way things have gone for you over the past several years in the Champions League since they've really undergone this project, yeah, I know that they had the one final that they reached where they lost in the COVID year to Bayern, but like, is running it back really the best option? Like, they may say, you know, do we really want to pour that kind of funds and resources into bringing Messi back on another contract? They may think, we'll sell a lot of jerseys, but is it going to help us win right now? I don't know. Like, if Mbappe, I guess Mbappe, unhappy or not, if you can get him, you keep him.
But what is the Qataris' plan now?
I don't know. I have no idea where this goes from here, because I don't know. I mean,
like, is this it? Like, a point was made, I think, was by Adam Crafton about all the Paris is a hotbed of soccer talent, youth soccer talent. They haven't really been successful in bringing that through in the academies. They've signed the biggest names in world football and won nothing, like nothing of any note. Like, they should always be winning that league.
Right.
So like, is this it? Like, what is the point of this? And if you're Manchester United or a Manchester United supporter that's been banging the drum for Qatari ownership to get rid of the Glazers, I mean, if this is how they do things, I really don't know where this is going right now. I think that the power and the influence that that Qatar has and the ownership has in European football now is something they won't want to divest themselves of. They won't want to get rid of that. And so they'll stay where they are. But I mean, the model has to be thought up again. This has been a disaster. A disaster. And I think Neymar's career, for him to have spent the last 5 years in this, the prime years of his career, just doing this, it's a shame. It's wrong.
And I don't think it's a model that Mbappe will follow. I think he'll go.
I mean, they're going to make it super hard for him to do that. And he's going to make it super hard for him. We don't know the clauses in the contract, the exit things, but like, he's 24 now. He's entering those years. And he needs to be gone out of there like, because it's just it, he cannot fulfill the he cannot fulfill the dream to be in the pantheon of the greats and the guys he watched at Real Madrid as he was growing up if he stays where he is.
Yeah, it's just incredible that they couldn't score. I mean, and the, like I said, the guys who scored against them, Choupo-Moting, Kingsley Coman, former players of theirs that they allowed to leave because they, you know, they needed bigger and better between those in those walls and within that club. And I don't think you're overstating it when you say it's been disastrous for what they expected this to be. Back-to-back years of round of 16 exits. And look, there's a little bit of misfortune there with getting drawn against Real Madrid and Bayern Munich in those matches. But you're PSG. Like, look who's on your team. Neymar, Mbappe, Messi. And even if, like, Neymar's hurt, okay, it's Mbappe and Messi and Verratti. And, like there's plenty of great players there. Marquinhos, Donnarumma's in net. Like, you know, you were drawn against a difficult opponent. But, like, that's like the whole goal of this was for you to develop a team that could dispatch of difficult opponents, you know? So like if you're PSG, I don't want to hear whines of like, oh, but we didn't get drawn to with Club Bruges. Well, that's like, that's never what this was about, beating teams like Club Bruges. It was always the whole project here was to be able to beat teams like Bayern and Real Madrid. Back-to-back years, couldn't do it. I think you're right. Disastrous. And I don't know what happens next. Like, I mean, what you say, all the young talent in Paris, they're not like, this ownership group is not going to just suddenly become like, yeah, well, you know what? We're going to build from within our youth academy. No, that's not happening. But like, know, but what's the destiny? Like, who are the guys that now see that as a destination club? I don't know.
But you have to give, I mean, I don't think it's a good model either. I don't believe in nation states owning teams, but you have to give City credit at least. Like, City have developed their academy. City have, I mean, they've tried to
sure.
And have been successful in building things out. I mean, PSG just haven't, or maybe they haven't put the same effort in. Another thing that was galling as well was Verratti's error. Like, it had the smell of Idrissa Gana Gueye for Everton against Arsenal, that kind of dwelling on the ball, facing the wrong way, and then the ball gets taken off you. But that seemed... Like, I hold Verratti in a higher regard than those kind of errors at this level. Like, he's a better player than that. And I feel like there's a contagion between, you know, throughout this side, and they're not a good team. Like, we asked this question, was adding Messi going to change this now? And we always wanted to err on the side of, he's Messi. It's amazing.
Yeah, but I bought it. I'm not going to run from it.
No, I know, but you just... Modern football seems to demand more. And like we say with Real Madrid, we'll look at them, but Real Madrid are a unit and they're together and their weakest player is still very strong. And this is just, this team is rudderless. I also think Sergio Ramos, he should not be starting for any serious club at this level now.
That's true, although I don't really look at him as the reason they lost.
I don't know, but...
Other than the ball being cleared off the line, he came closer than anyone to scoring with his header.
Yeah, I do think he's a kind of symptomatic of the kind of, let's load it up with stars and people we know and put a manager in who's doing well at the time and go for it. Like, it was Pochettino, it was, you know, whoever they can get that's got that kind of gravitas and put them in. It seems surprisingly without plan is basically what I'm saying. And it's been exposed again. I mean, they've spent $1 billion on this. $1 billion. I mean, despite the, you know, there's ethical issues and 5 of the last 7 seasons, they've gone out in the last 16. What's just money burned.
Incredible.
Wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. And I don't want to take away. I thought at times Musiala was quite good.
I want to talk about them.
I thought Alphonso Davies. I wouldn't say that you can take a ton out of this about Bayern Munich and go forward and say, who they look like. I don't think you can.
Yeah, I agree. I think I agree with you. Now, granted, last year it took us a while. Well, not us. It took one of us a while to kind of get to that place with Real Madrid. So who knows? There's still, you know, maybe in the end, maybe we'll be more impressed with this Bayern side than whatever we think right now. They're definitely good. But yeah, I don't think, like, I don't look at them and say, like, that's my favorite for this tournament. I don't know. This tournament feels wide open to me. Bayern's got a shot, but yeah, I don't think it's some world beater that just dispatched a PSG from this tournament. Bayern's really good. They're really good. So are PSG. Like, you know, couldn't score a goal over these two legs. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was going to ask you about Bayern. If you come away with this, you come away from this wondering, you know, thinking that they have what it takes to win this competition. And I'm with you. I don't know that I can. I wouldn't say no, but I can't really answer that after this. I'm not. No. I wasn't blown away. There's moments, you know, when João Cancelo can come off the bench, and then help set up a goal the way that he did. Driving forward, great pass to Gnabry. Like, you know, so they're certainly dangerous and they're deep. But yeah, it's, they're not, you know, they're not invincible.
No. And I amazingly, after them beating a team with Mbappe and Messi in it, I have to say, I need to see more. I need to see them against a better, more coherent opposition. And that's the facts of it.
Yeah, so it's Bayern who go through 3-0 on aggregate, 2-0 on the night, a raucous atmosphere in that place. It was a spectacle. The crowd was up for it. It was a fun occasion. But PSG, with the exception of a couple moments here and there, they kind of just whimper out of this one. It's really something. And Bayern onto the quarterfinals. Let's continue now, JJ. Let's go to we'll go to yesterday or 2 days ago, depending on when you're listening. Chelsea. They do it. They come from behind. Borussia Dortmund 1, Chelsea 2 on aggregate. 2-0 on the night. It goes to the Blues at Stamford Bridge. And quite possibly, I mean, it might be the biggest win of Graham Potter's career. I think that at the very least, what I would say about this game is the fact that they did this, that they overturned the deficit, that they advanced to the quarterfinals of this competition, I think this now buys him the remainder of the season. I think he just got that out of this win.
I certainly think that. I think it was a better attacking performance, albeit an imperfect attacking performance. You look at even Sterling's goal was an incredible, embarrassing whiff. That took everyone by surprise, bounced and spun the right way. And then the next finish was excellent. Yeah, don't get me wrong, but, you know. And then he had that other chance from the brilliant Havertz goal, which was ruled out for basic offside in the run-in. João Felix played Sterling over the top. And Sterling hits it straight at the goalkeeper, like straight down the middle. So they're not fixed by any manner up front, but they were much more coherent. I thought with Reece James and Chilwell back in the side, they gave them that balance on the left and the right. There was a
had a great game.
Yeah, so they were able to formulate combinations and get together. Like there's just no question that there's something in this side. There really is. But yeah, I mean, I would have to say I was so disappointed with Dortmund. So disappointed with Dortmund. I think the turning point in the game was Jude Bellingham's terrible miss. When he's in, and he knew it himself, when the ball breaks him in the box, he side foots it past the post. If he gets a right connection with that from that range, that's a goal. Dortmund right back in it, more than back in it, level. And it just doesn't happen. And that was important. But the last 10, 15 minutes of a Champions League game like that, where there's no away goals, and you're just fighting for your life, you want to see a team go at it and for the goal mouth to be peppered and bombarded. Dortmund never did that. And that just kind of leaves you with this kind of, I don't know, blah taste. Now, Dortmund are joint top in the Bundesliga right now. So, I mean, their season is still very much lots to play for. It could end up in a spectacular championship win, which I would think they would take over anything. Considering where they've been the last few years, to be back and be competitive in a title race, absolutely. But it wasn't good. Now, Derek Ray tweeted this, which I think is prescient. For those who keep track, Gio Reyna's 85 minutes as a sub were not marked highly at Stamford Bridge by influential Kicker magazine. Reyna was given a 5 based on the 1-6 German schools mark system, where 6 is the poorest. Reyna was one of 4 BVB players given a 5. Julian Brandt was badly missed. So, now our friend Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast, he watches a lot of European football. He responded to Derek and kind of said he thought that was harsh. I thought it was harsh too. I thought Reyna was fine. He was unspectacular. He was tidy. He was decent on the ball. I mean, he didn't do a ton, but like, tell me the Dortmund player that did. So
yeah, that does feel a little harsh. He wasn't great. Like I remember he drew a foul in a key area.
Yeah,
had a couple dribbles. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't spectacular. I didn't think he was awful. He was just kind of out there.
I thought it was harsh too. But I was just glad to see him on the field in a big game. That was the big thing for me.
Well, yeah, he really has not been playing lately for them, which is a whole other thing.
No, it's been a roller coaster. He had those 2 weeks after the World Cup where it seemed as if he was their golden goal kind of super sub, and we all made jokes about Triple G knowing exactly what to do with him. And then he fell out of the team. Now, the team was winning and being successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't get everything we want. And if the managers stumble across a formula that works and Gio Reyna isn't in it, that's just tough. But hopefully now from this, he can kind of play his way back in a bit.
Well, not if they're reading Kicker magazine.
No, Kicker.
Rare 1-6 rating where the higher number is the worst rate. Like, can't you just be like the rest of us? You can't just do 1-10 where 1 is bad and 10 is good. They've got to be that different. I got no use for it. None. We should also, JJ, before we get out of this, I mean, there were some big moments in this game, but perhaps none bigger than everything that happened shortly after the second half began and the penalty was awarded. First of all, for a handball that I just, I mean, again, I will continue with my policy of just saying, yep, okay, fine. Like, I don't know. I've seen it given. I've seen it not given. So whatever they choose to do, I'm just going to accept it. That's where I'm at with the handball. As for what happened after that, boy, Kai Havertz, what a weird player. He's missing. You know, he hits the inside of the post early in this game. Then he scores a worldie, which is ruled out. Then he gets to take the penalty, misses it, gets to retake it. I mean, the stones on Graham Potter to allow Havertz to step back up and take it again. I guess that's how you win a player over. Like to have the faith in Havertz to do it again when he's been in this run of such poor form.
Yes.
But all of that. So I've read up on this, Dale Johnson, everybody, about the decision to allow Chelsea to retake the penalty on the encroachment. I guess where I fall on it is essentially that I think I'm with the Dortmund players. I know Jude Bellingham called it a joke. They were disgusted basically by the fact that it was re-given. Now, here's the thing that I think people need to understand from everything I've read about this, like encroachment can happen. And it can even happen where the player who is encroaching, if he's first to the ball and clears it, that doesn't necessarily automatically make it a retaken penalty. Player has to have been judged to in some way impeded a player on the other team from getting to that ball. And in watching the replays and looking at still shots, I just don't know who the Chelsea player is around that ball that's going to get there. And so once, like, if you've come to that determination, then I just don't think that the penalty should have been given for a second chance. Yeah, I think Chelsea were fortunate.
I mean, this is the IFAB law. If an attacking player is guilty of encroachment, the penalty is retaken if the player scores, but an indirect free kick is otherwise awarded. If the encroachment is by a defending player, but the penalty is scored, the goal stands. If the penalty is not converted, it is retaken.
Right.
You know, both sets of players were seen encroaching. Chelsea players were seen encroaching during Havertz's first attempt. So if both defending and attacking players are guilty of encroachment, the penalty is retaken regardless of whether the initial spot kick is scored or not. So that's the rule. But I actually just go back to first principles. I mean, the defender was turning away his back to the ball, and it's wellied at him from that kind of range, and his hands at an unnatural angle. I mean, he's in movement, he's twisting. Unless you want him to like do the thing that Alexi Lalas says, well, everyone will just learn and they'll adapt how to, when you get in the box, tuck your arms behind your back Have you tried running or moving
It's too unnatural.
That's unnatural in and of itself. Now, listen, and they are a sensitive bunch. I'm not saying Chelsea wouldn't have got a second anyway. They were well on top. I think they would have got their second goal. So don't get mad at me, Chelsea fans.
No, I'm not delegitimizing their win.
I'm just
looking at this incident.
Yeah, I just don't like that that's a penalty at all. And everything that happened after it, I can see why Dortmund players were upset. Yeah, I don't think there's any point going over it, though. It's happened now. There are the laws of the game to explain why it did happen. I get it. But I totally understand if you're a Dortmund supporter or a Dortmund player and you're feeling pretty sore about it right now. But flip side to that coin, don't think you did enough to go through anyway.
Yeah, I mean, including stoppage time, they basically had 50 minutes after that to go for it. And they didn't really have a whole lot to show for it. So that's a tough way to go out. And, you know, did their fans show up. Some of the scenes of their fans marching to Stamford Bridge beforehand, I mean, it's pretty intimidating stuff. But the team did not quite show up in the way that the fans did. That's a frustrating one for them. They're going to feel like they let that one get away going to that with a lead. Chelsea were good, but not incredible. That's a tough one. But to circle back around to Potter, it's just interesting to see where this now goes from here. Like if this does, you know, we keep using the Arteta example as to why Chelsea should stick with him. Look what Arsenal did. Look how it turned out. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's just interesting to me that let's say this now turns around and it all finally does click into place and these new signings come good and Chelsea get comfortable and they just start flying and they compete with Man City and United and whatever, and they're winning titles and Potter's the man to do it. It will always be interesting to me that we can look back, at least in my opinion, almost on an exact game that allowed it all to happen. Cause I really will always wonder if they had lost this and crashed out, and we got to that international break and Todd Boehly maybe said, you got us knocked out of Champions League. You haven't moved us into competition for a European place. We're not doing this. But the fact that he did this, I think he saved his job. And I think it's just interesting that there will always be a signature game that could spawn what turns out to potentially be a good era for Potter and for Chelsea. Just interesting to me.
Todd Boehly stars in The Patient Billionaire with John C. Reilly as Todd Boehly.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. I could see that. Anything else on this one?
No. I kind of want to get to Tottenham and AC Milan because you're going to vent and I feel like I could go and make a cup of tea during this.
Well, I want you to hear it. I don't want to just shout into the wind. I respect your opinion.
I just want to get to Rafa Silva and Benfica because they're giving me the feelings that I got with Ajax in 2019.
We can talk about that if you want.
No, let's do Tottenham AC Milan because this was a disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
And
lay it on me. I deserve it.
It was a disgrace. I think from what I heard, I only saw the last few minutes of it where actually Tottenham livened up a bit. They had the Kane header that was saved, but then AC Milan went down the other end. They could have scored themselves. They hit the post.
I would say because like that was when CBS switched over from Bayern PSG.
Yes.
Just to let everyone know, that 30 seconds that you saw there, that was not representative of the rest of that game. All right. That was standalone stuff. It was thrilling. But that was not how this game went.
I think an AC Milan team that struggles with teams like Sassuolo and is generally...
They're not that good.
No, they're not that good. And the fact that Tottenham... This is all Tottenham could do over 180 minutes of football.
Pathetic.
Is pathetic. And I honestly think that they should just probably fold as a football club now after putting in a performance like that.
All right. Here's a quick trivia question for you, JJ. I think I'm right on this, but do you know the last time Tottenham scored in the Champions League knockout stage?
The last time that Tottenham scored in the Champions League knockout stage was 2019.
Lucas Moura in the 96th minute against Ajax.
God, you stink.
Who would have thought in that moment watching that? Like, I can take myself right back to that place of where I was when that happened. If you had said to me then, by the way, in 2023, you still will not have scored another goal in this stage of the competition. I was like, get out of here. Oh, but here we are. A sadly familiar, feeble effort from Tottenham. And what makes it so frustrating, I mean, there's a lot of things that make it frustrating, but in particular, it's just like they play this certain way under Conte and you're almost resigned to it, which almost made me a little more excited in a weird way going into this one, because I was kind of like, all right, well, he knows now that they have to score. Like, so whatever, like, I get frustrated with the way they play because it's just, like, very defensive and it's reliant on just, like, a couple chances over the course of a game. But, like, they got to score now. He must know that. So, like, they'll be more open, I'm sure. They'll be more on the front foot, I'm sure. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. I couldn't believe how needlessly reckless Christian Romero was in this game. I've talked about it before. He's a brilliant defender. God, is he good. But we've always said, JJ, he's going to be good for one of these moments at a bad time. It's going to pop up and it's going to get the best of him with how reckless he is. Well, I would say this is pretty much pinpoint exactly that. The knockout stage of an effing Champions League game, second leg, needing a goal. That first yellow, insanity. What's he doing? And the second one equally is dumb and reckless. Gone. Gone. Ugh. Just the peak of frustration. And then, like, Richarlison afterwards weighing in. This season is being S. I was coming off two good wins against West Ham and Chelsea, and suddenly he, Conte, puts me on the bench. I didn't understand. I mean, first, I don't know, maybe he's right. Maybe Richarlison is adding something in some way. But also, you haven't scored in the league all season, all right? You're not, like, the missing ingredient to this. Like, I just don't want to hear it from him. You know, Son, who's had a bad season, if it was the opposite, Son hasn't played well this year, but at least he's got a history. He's a Golden Boot winner. You know, if it was him saying this, I'd say, oh, you know, I don't want to hear it from you either. You haven't played well, but at least, like, you've got something to back it up with. What does Richarlison have with this club? He's got no equity here. Just, like, pathetic all around. And then Conte afterwards. He's talking about injuries after the game as part of this. Well, let's go through some of the players that are playing right now because of the injuries. Fraser Forster, by the way, was very good in this game. Mm. He kept Tottenham in it. Mm. So I don't want to hear about the Hugo Lloris injury. Yves Bissouma, he's out injured. He's yet to prove that he's anything better than Oliver Skip. I haven't seen that. Ryan Sessegnon was out injured. He probably wouldn't have started this game. Bentancur is the only one. He's the only one that you could say really hurts them by not being there because he's great. He is a great player. But guess what? No one's got a full squad right now. Everybody's got a guy missing. It can't be the reason. AC Milan aren't that good. They're fine. They're fine. But to not score against them across these two legs, like, pathetic.
That is.
And this is now, and this is three straight games in three different competitions where Tottenham haven't scored a goal. And in two of them, they're tournaments that they're trying to win, knocked out, eliminated, couldn't score against Sheffield United, couldn't score in two games against Milan, couldn't score at Wolves when they're benching guys against Sheffield because they want to go for top four. Like, Conte afterwards, he continues, I'm really sorry for the fans, but we cannot invent the win. It's important to know this. Hope for a miracle to find a trophy. We have to build step by step. Build step by step? Like, that's not why you were brought here.
No.
This manager was brought in to help finish the job, not build one. I know things don't happen overnight, but you're Antonio Conte. You go everywhere and you win. But that's ultimately it, though. Guys like Mourinho, Conte, like, they trip and fall into trophies everywhere they go, but it can't be done at this club. It can't be done at this club. Tottenham, JJ, have been, it's like they've been undercover for the past 10 years, like, masquerading as a big club. And they did an amazing job of it. They fooled everyone. Yep. They fooled Mourinho and Conte. They fooled themselves. Like, they even fooled the Super League. They got invited to the Super League, this team. It's unbelievable. It's like, you ever see She's All That? It's like they're Tottenham or Lainey Boggs
right.
in the Premier League world of She's All That. They took their glasses off, they did their hair, and they tricked everyone into a seat at the cool table. But like, it's not who they really are, and they can't hide it any longer. Like, this is, we know what they are. And in a weird way, it's almost like coming to that realization, it almost makes me like, I'm not angry at them. I'm almost proud of them. Like, they managed to do all this without having been bought by, like, oil money or a nation state or, you know, like, they actually kind of, like, went about doing it and, you know, with some youth guys like Harry Kane. Like, it's amazing. But ultimately, they can't be one of those big clubs because they can't act the way those clubs do in this era of modern football. Like, you know, Tottenham spends $63 million on a mistake like Tanguy and Ndombele. Some clubs will do that and they don't stress over it. when those guys go bust, because they'll outspend their mistakes. Tottenham aren't that club. They're not owned by the Saudis or the Qataris. Like, they're not going to be able to outspend those mistakes. And like, a lot of fans are furious with them for not behaving that way. That's what they want them to do. Yes. But like, it's just not realistic to act them to do that, at least not in my opinion. And by the way, to a certain extent, they have tried. Like, they did that on Ndombele, Gio Lo Celso, you know, Brian Hill, like all these signings that were supposed to be significant, they all went bust. And they did drop $60 million on Richarlison. They did then spend $50 million on Christian Romero. Yves Bissouma was $30 million. So, like, you know, they held on to Kane and Son. Like, in the past, they would have Berbatov'd Modric and bailed those guys right out of there. So they have tried to act like a big club, but ultimately, it's not who they are. They can't do it. And so, I think that era, I think it's over. I think Lanny Boggs, he's putting the glasses back on, and I think Tottenham are once again revealing themselves to not be the Super League-level club that I think we thought they might have been for the past several years. I think this is it now. The charade is up.
So now we're definitely in the final days of this marriage, and there's going to try to be an amicable separation. I mean, Conte's not coming back.
No.
Tottenham don't want him back.
And by the way, as much fun it would be to quote unquote win the press conference with Pochettino, and you know I'll get on board.
Yeah.
But I'll say right now, I don't know that that's the answer either.
Well, can I put it to you this way? I was listening to our friend Jack Pitbrook on the View from the Lane podcast, and he was basically saying that, you know, Mourinho, Conte, their styles of play are not modern. They're not in keeping with the trends of the game. And that's kind of why Spurs have been left behind in the last few years. And whatever you think of Pochettino, his style of play, his thought process, the way the tactics are implemented is modern. And so he was trying to sell it as not a step backwards. It's not a retrograde step. And I think if he's available, you try again with him. What have you to lose? You're not taking... You see, the danger for me is the Daniel Levy model, where he goes and tries and gets a flavor of the month or someone he's admired, which was the case in Mourinho. Or he ends up trying to get someone, doesn't get the first four people on his list, and then settles like he did with Nuno. Now, that can't happen. And the one way it definitely won't happen is if you talk to Pochettino. Because I think at this point, after his experience with PSG, after the way, I wouldn't say his stock fell, but like there were certain, oh God, he did not make them any better. Mm. That he's gettable for Spurs now. The Man United stuff is off the table. He won't be Manchester United manager. That was the place he was expected to go. It didn't happen. PSG definitely put a dent in it. So he's there. He's a known quantity. What's unknown is whether he can come back in and work the Oracle again. But I don't think it's a bad move at all. And
No, it's not. And it's a bad move.
And I think, and I don't want it to seem like, oh, well, this is fan service, which, I mean, in part it would be. There's such strong emotion from Mauricio Pochettino at Tottenham Hotspur that seeing him come back would definitely rally the troops. You said it'd win the press conference for sure. But I think it's a mistake. Hiring him is a mistake Levy can't make with hiring him. There isn't the level of error he can come up with. This is not for all the things Daniel Levy's done at the club, commercially, structurally, those things are brilliant. And that's the kind of Lanny Boggs. That is the Lanny Boggs. He's made them the new stadium, all that stuff. The stuff they have not got right is the football. And that's because he is not a good football man. Okay.
Levy's
not a football man. He's a brilliant negotiator contracts.
Like, I think he's done an excellent job of getting them to a certain level. Like, remember when he took over, they were flirting with relegation in some of those years in the late 90s. And then he came in the early 2000s, and like if you look at Tottenham then to the place where he's consistently gotten them as a top four team, competing in the Champions League, reaching a Champions League final. This stuff was straight up unimaginable. So yeah. I think it's wrong to say he's not a football man, that his decision making on the football front is poor. I don't know though, like maybe he's one of these guys who was good at building a project, but then like it then takes maybe a certain a different mind to get a team to that through that next hurdle. and Tottenham are stuck. They can't, like, they had moments where you thought, like, they contended for a couple titles in the league but couldn't win them. They got to a Champions League final, couldn't win it. So, like, they've had moments where you're like, ooh, they're close. But, like, it might be a different brain, a different set of eyes to look at this and say, okay, well, you did a good job, Daniel. Like, you really took this club and elevated them to a level that we wouldn't have thought. How do they now get to the next level? They got to break through this wall that they can't seem to break through with him at the helm. And so I will never say that he's, you know, that he has not been good for the club, that he's not, you know, made the right decisions. Like, it almost makes me sad in some ways, the chance for him to go, that I think, you know, if he does someday leave the club, people are going to be happy about it. I think that's wrong. Like, I think he probably deserves a lot more credit than whatever he'll wind up getting. For some reason, he's just not viewed as a likable figure within the club. But I think what he's done to them has been amazing. But it kind of feels like it can go no further with him, that someone else has to take it from here. And I don't know. And like you say, Pochettino, I would, if it happened, I'd be happy about it. But I wish, what I want more than that is for them to identify the guy that I can't, but like, they have smart people in that building. Find me the next Pochettino, you know, like, who is that up and coming manager who maybe has different ideas, you know, who's on the rise in some way, that like that, that's kind of who I feel like Tottenham would thrive under. But I don't know. It's it's been a rough week for them.
It really has. There's one other thing just before we get off this. Paratici. Mm-hmm. He'll remain there. So.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, I don't know what sort of trouble he might be in with
we don't
of the Juventus stuff.
We don't know, but I mean, would he jive? Would he jive with Pochettino? Would he work with Pochettino?
My gut is to say no, that Pochettino would want that sort of control. But I also don't, but maybe, like, I don't know. Like, Pochettino never struck me as like a tyrant who was needed to operate that way. But they may, like, Pochettino is much bigger now in his stature in the game than he was when he first arrived. So he might be able to demand something like that now when that wasn't the case before. So it wouldn't shock me if the two of them couldn't coexist, but I don't know, maybe it's not a given, like, I don't know. But the other thing too, this is probably something more for the end of the season as when we get into the transfer window, but maybe I'll regret this later. I'll go on the record now and say, if Kane wants to leave, some Tottenham fans will hate him for it. I won't be one of them. I just won't. Danny Rose today was on Sky Sports, and, you know, he was talking about a guy who was a teammate of Kane's for years, who adores Kane. He said, Danny Rose, who adores Tottenham, you know, that's like his team where he became what he became. And he's on there saying Kane deserves so much better than this. Like, that's what he kept saying. Like, yeah. And I wouldn't fault Kane for it. Yeah, it might feel cheap to go to like a Bayern and just like win a trophy, but like, he deserves to have that feeling. Like, he just does. He's of that stature and of that level where he deserves to have a trophy that he can hoist over his head and like, and have that moment. And I just doesn't feel like it's going to happen for him at this club. So if he wants to go, I will always, it won't change the way I view him. He's always going to be my favorite player at this team. Maybe some disagree. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. And I think this will be the summer it has to happen if he's going to go. So there we are. I just want to round off the Champions League, Andrew, with Benfica. 7-1 on aggregate, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. It was 7-0 until the final moments.
An absolute battering of Club Brugge, who we really enjoyed them in the group stage. Scott Parker took the job over, and it's not really gone well. We'll get
no,
to
he
Scott
was
Parker.
He was relieved of his duties.
He indeed, and we'll get to that in a second. He did not get any of the farewell. They don't operate the welcome back at the club anytime, best wishes for the future. And what's the other one? Thanks for all the work. Maybe they don't operate that system in the Juniper League in Belgium. But anyway, a smashing performance from Benfica.
Wait, are you going to read the statement? Because it's the coldest one I've ever seen.
It's amazing. And the translation makes it so good. And I kept searching the website for more. There's got to be more. But there's nothing. I might as well read it now while I'm here.
It'll only take you 3 seconds.
Scott Parker, no longer coach of Club Bruges. Scott Parker is no longer head coach of Club Brugge. Parker, 42, was announced as the new head coach of Club Bruges on December 31st last year. The English ex-international previously worked for Fulham and Bournemouth and replaced Carl Hofkins at the club. In 12 matches, the Briton could only win 2 times. Ends. That's it. It's as if they're saying, look, guys, what do you want us to say here? He could only win twice in 12 games. All the best. See ya. Now, I went into the comments below Club Bruges' tweets, and I had to hit translate. There was a lot of kindness from Bruges supporters. A lot of them saying, actually, you know, it's not his fault. It's the club's, it's the board's fault. He didn't get enough time. Maybe he wasn't back properly, et cetera, et cetera. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe Scott Parker was very, very much liked in Bruges, but he's out, he's gone. And that is one of the coldest statements you're ever likely to get. Just quickly on Benfica. I mean, the intricate play around the box, the way they link everything together, they're really good to watch. They're really good to watch. Now, Bruges were not up to much, so I don't want to extrapolate too much from this, but we have seen Benfica be good against better teams, Ajax one of them, in this tournament. Rafa Silva, the goal he scores. Ooh. So like, and by the way, Gonzalo Ramos scored two excellent goals himself. Yeah. It looked very good. João Mario with a penalty, and then David Neres with a good goal. So look, there's other performances in the side.
This is two straight seasons of reaching the quarterfinals for them.
They are of all the clubs in European football that have the biggest history, right? Like they're a bigger club in many ways than like Glasgow Celtic or Rangers in terms of all the trophies they've won. They're the one that kind of hasn't really made that little burst back. Ajax have made their little run to prove, hey, we're still here. Benfica have done it a little bit in the quarterfinals. I'm wondering if this season, just by the very nature of the season, they can't do more. But Rafa Silva, his goal, Andrew. So the ball comes into him from the left-hand side and his first touch actually isn't that good. It takes the ball behind him, but he's able to swivel and with the outside of his right boot, just curl it into the bottom corner. Just stab it into the bottom corner. He's a brilliant, brilliant footballer. He's just gorgeous to watch. And at 29, there's a few years left in him. So, yeah, look, Benfica might be my my cause celebre for this Champions League. But
really? What if they're matched up with Napoli?
Oh, God. That could be a belter.
Yeah.
Could be an absolute belter.
A buddy of mine was there. You know, my friend Ted.
Oh, Ted was there, was he?
He was at the game. Yeah.
Nice. Good for Ted. I was in my local pizzeria on the corner after the pints last night for a just fabulous post-pint slice. And
that's the best kind of slice.
Oh, tasted so good. And the Italian guy in there is a Napoli supporter. So we were talking and he goes, 15 points. It's over. It's over. There's only 12, 13 games. It's over. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, please, please. And I suddenly start talking with my hands and doing the little, prayer hands and everything. Like I'm appealing to Kalina, the referee, that I've been fouled or that I haven't fouled someone rather. But anyway, so me and him are talking in the language of hand, which is the official language of Italy. And like he's convinced of it that they're going to get it done. So if Pizza Man can't,
he's not alone. I would say.
No, I hope so.
I would agree.
I hope so. Anyway, that's the Champions League, such as it was.
Yeah, and there will be more next week,
for sure.
Which I do. For however, you're not totally off base in your assessment and Karl Anka's assessment. This was kind of,
yeah.
You know, the Champions League often delivers, performances and results that you'll never forget. This round, so far. I'd forget this.
Yeah.
This is kind of forgettable. Yeah. But that's what makes this fun. Next week could be a completely different story. It might be some of the most exhilarating stuff we've ever seen. That's this competition, it always delivers. I don't know when, but it's nailed on that it will at some point. So stay tuned. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead. Let me gather my thoughts. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side with a little bit of CONCACAF Champions League, a little bit of a movie review. A couple other things as well. Don't go anywhere. More Caught Offside still to come.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Are you a Manchester United fan who has struggled to listen to Caught Offside since Sunday? Has the thought of JJ's joyous voice brought about feelings of resentment, pain, and diarrhea? Well, now there may be medical relief for you. Just Suck It Up is a scientifically proven way to enjoy Caught Offside again, despite a record-breaking defeat to Liverpool. In clinical trials, Just Suck It Up has been proven to promote memories of the Carabao Cup, Sir Alex Ferguson smiling, and that one time Pogba did something useful. Just Suck It Up should never be taken while operating heavy machinery, listening to Andrew, or making love.
Thanks to Just Suck It Up, I can listen to Caught Offside again. It's like Sunday at Anfield never happened.
Ask your doctor about the power of Just Suck It Up and find your way back to the pod.
Wow.
Ah.
How about that? The old JJ double down.
No, it's what are you talking about? It's a real drug. Just suck it up. Sometimes in sports and in life, the best thing to do is to take two doses of Just Suck It Up with a glass of water and listen to the podcast and don't be such bees about it. I mean,
you know what? I respect this move by you. At first, I was kind of like, oh, he's angering some people. But like, you know, like, you lost. Come on, United fans. You lost. Like, what do you think? Like, Your arch rival beat you 7-0. There's not going to be graciousness here. Like
they're getting absolute dogs abuse, and I've stayed off it. I've just watched from afar. I haven't really joined in.
Well, I wouldn't say you stayed off it. I mean, did you hear yourself the other day?
What? I mean, the game.
Think of the way the podcast started. You cursing.
Oh,
effing brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody enjoyed
that was in the first 30 seconds of the show.
Oh, God. And I mean, if a Man United fan had beaten Liverpool if they'd won 7-0, I'd expect them to be exuberant about it. But anyway, there's more fallout for Manchester United kind of across the last few days from this. So Erik ten Hag is sticking with Bruno Fernandes as his captain.
Yeah.
I was listening again because it was live podcast last night. Ken was saying,
why don't you just marry these guys? Well, leave this. All you do is talk about them. Oh, their podcast, it's so great. 10 years. I got to talk with them, have drinks. All right. So go join their podcast, for God's sake.
Oh, the green-eyed monster. No, but if I can return to the task at hand, because we have other Champions Leagues to talk about, believe it or not. And I got to sing my Champions League theme for it. So Fernandes, I think Gary Neville, which I didn't know, suggested on a live broadcast that Fernandes was trying to get himself subbed in the second half of that game. But he wasn't. He was just being exasperated, turning around. I mean, I'm not saying his performance was good. It wasn't.
It was embarrassing.
He was embarrassing.
He embarrassed himself.
He did embarrass himself. But the things he did to the bench were not, he wasn't trying to cop out. He wasn't trying to wuss out of the game. That's not true. But it went everywhere. So Ten Hag is sticking with him as his captain. There was no discipline.
I think he has to, by the way.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah.
My initial instinct was, what exactly does Marcus Rashford have to do to get that captaincy? I mean, for the love of God, he's like the greatest guy. He's a Manchester kid, came up through the system. He's one of the best players in Europe right now. What does he have to do to get that armband? But if you take it away from Bruno after a performance like that, I think you publicly embarrass him a little bit too much. And while he may deserve it, he is one of your best players, and I don't know if Ten Hag can afford to lose him at this stage in his time as manager. So no. I think he's got to ride it out, at least for the rest of the season.
No, there was no disciplined daddy action. There was no like running extra kilometers like they did against after the Brentford game. There was none of that.
Well, I did hear some stuff.
What did you hear?
that he made them like during training. I think he had like the audio of blasting of like the noise after each of the goals were scored from the game.
Oh, he did that.
I thought so. I'll double check, but I thought I had read that.
I didn't read that, but that's interesting. That's, I mean, Eric Guantanamo Bay Ten Hag. That's what that is.
Yeah.
That's like weird, man. Did he have like hoods on them? And
I mean, I don't think so.
Ghosts of Abu Ghraib stuff, like Jesus.
I mean, easy there. It's not. Yeah, it's not, I know, so.
Yeah, but like, okay, it's a certain line of psychology he's going down there. And then the big
thing. Okay with it. Like this team, maybe he thinks that they need to be humbled a little bit. I don't mind it so much if he did that.
Mm. And then the big thing for Man United fans was Wout Weghorst. I didn't notice until a friend brought it to my attention. I didn't notice he touched the Anfield sign, but he did on the way out. And then he had to, because obviously everything these days is filmed, it was spotted. And so United fans, you know, got on his back for doing it. It was a jinx. It was this, it was that, which was kind of like, probably way over the top. So he comes out, he says, normally I would never react on media topics, but for this one, it's worked it because you amazing Manchester United fans are so important to me. So I just want to clarify the video that is doing the rounds. From the national team, I know that Virgil always touches that sign, and the only intention I had was to stop him touching it to wind him up before the game. I mean, that's not what it looked like at all.
No, why would that have stopped Van Dijk from touching it? I don't understand.
Weird. I mean, this is we're in the excuses now. As a child, I always supported FC Twente, and as a proud player now for Manchester United, my dedication to this incredible club can never be questioned. Sunday was a terrible day for all of us. We were putting everything into making it right in the next weeks. We will bounce back together and achieve our aims this season. Okay, so I tweeted out, and this is more likely that happened. Like he's like Wout Weghorst is living a bit of a dream. He left Burnley this time last year. He was on his way to the championship. He gets bought by, who was it, Besiktas in Turkey. And at 31, a guy with his kind of record, he's probably not getting back to the very top again. He's probably not going to get back to a top team. So, like, think about the week he's had. He ends up at Manchester United. He wins his first cup. Nobody's more happy than him. He's, like, on the field. He's like the cat that got the cream. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest game in English football, he's starting. And I just think he got excited and he touched the sign. He'd seen it a billion times and he probably didn't realize the meaning.
Just
of
some
that.
Kind of like muscle memory. Just like that's there. I do this. I know. I don't know.
I kind of get like that a little bit too. Like, so, you know, if there's things, you know, if I was to go to a college football stadium, right. And they had some tradition that I'd seen them do on TV, even if I didn't support that team, I'd want to do that thing. Right.
But like, if you played for Michigan and you were playing in South Bend, you would tap the "Play Like a Champion Today" sign at Notre Dame. Like, no, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that because I know that. But what I mean is, like, I'm just saying that Weghorst is suddenly at Man United. This was not in the plan.
But what does that matter, though?
Because he's excited. Everything he does, I'm playing at Anfield. Start for you. It's all just a.
This guy just played at a World Cup. Let's not act like he's suddenly a kid in a candy store. Well, like he started at the Netherlands. Like he played for the Netherlands.
Will you explain why he touched the banner then? He forgot himself.
Because he's trying to wind up Verge. I don't know. You know how I feel about this? Did you see Craig Burley the other day talking about this?
No.
I feel the way he feels. Like, yeah, I thought it was a little weird that Weghorst did it. But Craig essentially, to paraphrase, he essentially said, with all the things going on in the world and with all the things going on in this sport, I'm supposed to get worked up over a guy touching a sign. He's like, you know, all these people out there that are so upset about a guy touching a sign. I got no use for any of you. I got no time for any of you.
Take issue with the Man United fans. They got upset anyways.
Can I read you something real quick, JJ? I think you're going to enjoy this quite a bit.
Go on.
I'm reading from The Independent, which is a real news outlet. I'm reading now. According to reports in British media, Ten Hag has attempted to make his squad, quote, angry by requesting them to watch back the critical moments of a second-half capitulation that gave Liverpool their biggest win over United. While Ten Hag stopped short of showing them the entire game, selected clips of the video nasty are believed to have cut deep. Red Devils players were also asked to sit in silence in the Carrington first team dressing rooms as they were replayed audio clips of the Anfield crowd's reaction to the horror show.
Oh.
Dutch sports psychologist Rainier Kors, brought to the club by Ten Hag, is also on hand for sessions as the squad attempts to recover in time for Thursday's Europa League last 16 first leg showdown with Spanish club Real Betis at Old Trafford. I think that sports psychologist is there to protect these players from their own manager.
Jesus.
I'll tell you what, my friend.
Remember quickly.
You better go in on this guy, because I remember Mourinho made time to watch back some goals and you tore him to shreds. You better give Ten Hag the same treatment right now.
I don't know how this is helpful. I'm not a psychologist, though, so maybe there is something in it. But I remember Mourinho got really annoyed because Eric Dier, he had all the TVs in the training tunnel were showing them getting defeated, the goals they conceded to Middlesbrough or someone in the cup. I can't even remember what it was. And Eric Dier turned one of them off, and Mourinho was like, who turned off the TV? Leave the TV on. Leave it on. Like, I am not sure that works, any of that. I'm more of the old school. Look, boys, forget about it. All right, get your
head down. Is that old school? That, to me, is more modern. They're there, players. They're there.
No.
To me, old school is more like, no, you're going to,
no, the old school
is... Neil Warnock, what would he say?
I don't think... Would Warnock do that?
He'd tear into them.
He would tear into them, but this seems more targeted psychological practices. I'm not sure Colin is doing that.
Whoa. How dare you? How dare you?
All right. Can I do the Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League song?
Sure. This is your time to shine.
These kind of our champions. Look at Violet. They're from Haitian League. Where are these teams from? From Salvador and Haiti. Oh, look, there's a dog in the field. The champion.
This is, of all the arrogant things that happen on this podcast, I don't think any of them are more arrogant than you singing that song. I don't want to find it funny. I feel bad laughing, but sometimes funny is funny. Yeah. But it exposes an ugly side of you every time you sing that song.
Yeah, that's probably true as well. But I'm going to get ugly on Austin FC. Can I start there first?
Please.
You want to go... I didn't see the Orlando City game, although 0-0 with Tigres away is good.
I can weigh in a little bit on that one, but...
The Philadelphia Union.
DVR'd it, avoided the score beautifully, had to mute some group texts, watched the whole thing.
You said, they won't be thrilled with their draw, but it's not bad. Would you ever stop? This is the team that you gas on about forever and ever, and most of MLS does that, how they're one of the best team in the country and yada, yada, yada. They had one shot on target away to the Salvadorian champions or whatever. Stop. Yeah. Makes me sick. They were crap. Absolutely crap. But speaking of crap. Well,
they were the better team in the game. There was no question about that.
One shot on target, my friend. Austin FC. What a disaster. But I'm going to start off with the Violet goals. The two cherry headers were brilliant. Their tall center forward. He was class. Absolutely. I think it was Luima was the winger that put in both crosses. Someone can correct me on that. But they were brilliant, brilliant headers. And then the third goal, the own goal. Again, it's another cherry header. It's a good save. And it pops back out. And he's got all the time in the world, Tarek, on his debut, mind you, for Austin to clear the ball, and he shanks it directly into his own net as he falls over. Absolute comedy stuff. So I had a look up at the Egyptian Tarek and to see how many he's had more clubs than you've had hot dinners. Freiburg 2 or whatever, Wolfsburg 2, El Guna, Betis, Columbus Crew on loan, ENPPI, Vadi Degla, Orlando City, Red Bulls 2, El Guna, El Masri. How the hell is he at Austin now? This is failing upward for someone like him. And like at most of those clubs, He's had 15 appearances, 20 appearances, 45. I mean, the most he had was at the Red Bulls, 46 in 2 years. Like, how is this guy there? What on earth? Absolute. If you're an Aston fan, all right, and you think that there's anything okay about this, or like you should boo your team onto the field in the next game. It's, well, maybe, I don't know. Disgraceful. For Gundes or Reti up front, and that's the best you can do. Absolute crap. Crap.
Yeah, I agree. And I felt a little bit of, to kind of blend that in with the Union game. I don't know. Like the lineup that they put out there, again, like, yeah, it should probably still be enough to go there and win, I think. But like, I don't know. Don't you kind of feel like, if you're the Union, this is a competition you could potentially win.
Well, they had...
and I know Jim Curtin talked, like they talked about how it pained him to feel like he needed to do this and rotate the squad the way that he did. But, you know, he's trying to be careful with guys. He thinks they're going to be competing, you know, deep into the season. So he's trying to be vigilant of that. But like, to me right now, I don't know. I'd prioritize this competition. I just would. And nobody is going to be mad at Jim Curtin if the Union deciding to go for it in the CONCACAF Champions League potentially cost them the supporter shield. Like, just, we talk about MLS all the time. Everyone gets in. Just get in the damn playoffs. Like, okay, if they're not the one seed, I'm not going to kill them for it. If that came at the cost of them winning the CONCACAF Champions League, like, I kind of would have liked to have seen them really go for it. And I know a lot of those guys did come on as subs. Gazdag came on. You know, Kai Wagner started, like, you know, Elliot started. So like, it's not that no one played, but like the team that began that game, the starting 11, it was just like a shell of what they are.
But they ended up springing Martinez, Carranza, Gazdag, and Bedoya anyways.
Yeah. Like, they put guys on late in the game to see if they could get that away goal. Cause the away goal, it does still matter in this competition.
It does in this.
So, I mean, like that was a little disappointing. Now, having said that, the Union did, like, I didn't think they were terrible. They were definitely the better team in the game. They couldn't finish. They just didn't, whatever chances they got, they didn't manage to take them. Torres had just a free header that he completely blew. Donovan had a couple chances. It's funny, JJ, because we can sit here and make fun of CONCACAF, you know, things being CONCACAF-y all we want. But, like, the Union were the more CONCACAF-y team in that game with, like, Donovan diving, trying to draw the penalty. Jose Martinez coming on. He's the most CONCACAF-y player in the region. It's not guys in Honduras or El Salvador. It's him. The way he plays and his attitude on the field. Like if he did all the same things he's doing, except doing it for an El Salvadorian club, we'd say this is what CONCACAF is all about. Look at that guy. He's nuts. He's on the Union. So, and it's funny though, because like as I was watching the game, we can talk about the pitch. I would love your pitch report on it. Oh my God.
I didn't see enough of it. All I know is a dog came on the field and that was,
so that was my thing.
That was the highlight of the game.
Well, I was watching the game and I was like, you know, we're deep into this one now in like the 65th minute or so. Aside from the fact that the pitch is like a disaster, this game hasn't really been quite as CONCACAF-y as you might expect. And there's a dog on the field. Oh, and he's eating the ball.
Awesome.
Oh, there we go. Right on cue. Mwah! Perfection. Oh, they were a rousing standing ovation at the Kaka Cafe, JJ, all the way over in Qatar. They were loving every second of it.
They were serving their hot gravel and urine with smiles.
JJ, that pitch, just maybe you can find a screenshot. Like, right, I'm okay. Again, not trying to be arrogant, but like, holy moly,
you're doing
man.
A good job, though.
Holy cow. I think it's the worst I've seen. And maybe, I don't know, maybe that's going too far. People can send me screenshots of others. It was so bad. The ball spent the entire game in the air being pinged around.
Oh, jeez. I'm looking at the dog who was trying to bite the ball and pick it up.
Yeah.
And you really get a good view of the field. Ooh.
Like the ball couldn't be rolled. It could only bounce. Like there was just, you know, lots of spots for the ball to pop. Like the whole game, it's just being headed around and pinged around. Like you couldn't really do much with it.
By the way,
it was really bad.
No, the field is terrible. It's absolutely terrible. By the way, no one is talking about this game online. literally even MLS itself, very good dog steals ball during Philadelphia Union versus, like, that was the best thing that happened, that the ball was taken away from these yahoos.
It was a great moment. It was a great moment.
Because they shouldn't be allowed to play with it.
I should mention, too, the tree behind the goal in the Austin game was gorgeous. Just an amazing tree.
It was a nice tree.
It was beautiful. And I think we need more of that.
More trees. I definitely think so.
More trees lining pitches. Aesthetically, I loved it. And then, in all seriousness, Orlando City and Tigres. Orlando City should feel probably pretty fortunate to have gotten out of that with a 0-0 draw. Tigres played well.
That's a good result, that.
And another moment of an MLS team being the more CONCACAF-y of the teams, when Gignac was wrongly given a red card for, I forget who it was, on Orlando City, basically faking as though Gignac had hit him in the face, which he didn't. He kind of just pushed his body. Guy on Orlando City grabbed his face. He was given the red. Thankfully, I know we never like to compliment VAR, but sometimes it's a damn good thing that it exists, because VAR was able to look at it and say, that's not a red. You're on. And boy, he's a part. He didn't score, but Gignac, he's a part of everything that they do.
Yeah.
It felt like every attack, every buildup, he's at the center of it. He's really something.
Big Mac.
Yeah.
Or Gignac.
That one 0-0 as well. And I should tell you, JJ, if MLS had been humbled a little bit over the first set of games, not tonight. Vancouver Whitecaps 5-0 over Real España of the Honduran League. So
good for them. Good for them.
Vancouver carrying the banner for MLS with some pride.
All right, I'm excited about this. Give us your quick review of when Saturday comes.
Oh baby, it was glorious. I had the whole afternoon to myself. I was so excited. I found it on YouTube. There were a couple ads here and there, but like, it was quick. You know how YouTube does it, where you can just hit the like skip after 5 seconds. It was great, not intrusive. So ultimately, here I'm just going to read. I don't have anything like, it's not like Roger Ebert here. Like, I just kind of have bullet points.
Okay,
and
that's fine.
You can comment off of them. Sure. The first thing I wrote was that this felt more like an 80s movie to me than a 90s one. The music, the look of it.
Yeah.
Just the cliches at every turn, the sports cliches everywhere. Just felt 80s to me. The wardrobes, okay. I guess maybe they were kind of 90s, but I don't know. Just, boy, it felt like the 80s.
Don't forget, the 80s lasted longer in Northern England then. Like, if you watch early 90s footage of anything in England or Ireland, you're like, yeah, is this 1985?
Well, all right. Then it was accurately captured then. Next thing I wrote, JJ, boy, they say bleeding hell quite a bit.
Yeah.
What is that? Bleeding hell.
I think that's in lieu of the fact that they weren't able to say, like, F.
They weren't?
Did they not say it in that film?
So they draw the line at, let's have a scene of all male genitalia out in the open. D***s everywhere. But they won't say the F word?
I don't know. I can't remember. I can't recall an F-bomb in that entire film.
I'd have to, maybe I got to rewatch it. But yeah, I guess that's possible.
You're rewatching it for the male genitalia, by the sounds
of
it.
What was that, though? That was so random.
Why wouldn't you show that? They're in the locker room.
Yeah, they were in the hot tub.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just caught me off guard. I was just like, oh, I guess we're doing this.
That's what you see in there. F***ing balls.
I guess they're going to make full use out of that R rating. Good for them. So now let's get into the Sean Bean portion of my critique. First of all, I went to his Wikipedia page as I was watching it. You know, he's currently on his fifth wife.
Too many. It's too many.
It is too many. I agree.
Stop getting married.
Yeah. At a certain point, just say, nah, maybe marriage isn't for me.
Not for me. And just live free and single and stuff.
So here's one of my big questions about this movie. And I want your help here. So Sean Bean, the character he plays, Jimmy Muir.
Yeah.
How old is Jimmy Muir supposed to be in this movie?
Big problem.
Sean Bean was born in 1959. This movie takes place in 1996.
He's 37.
So he's 37. Are we sure he's getting a trial with a club at 37?
No, he certainly isn't.
Why do they do this?
But they're painting him in the 25 to 27 bracket because he's a big star. You could get a 25-year-old to play there and you'd be like, oh, that's believable. But Sean Bean's a big English film star of the time, and that's why he got it.
But he's in his late 30s.
What do you want me to say?
I'm just raising the questions.
Maybe they could have done that fresh face technology that they did for in the Irishman form, which didn't really work.
I also wanted to get a pitch report from you on some of the Sunday League and Pub League pitches in this. Or worse than the Alianza Union pitch in El Salvador?
Very disappointing. Like, the pitches are nice. They're in the Yorkshire Dales. They're very green. They're just standard, bog standard Sunday League muddy pitches. But I remember one game being super annoyed. There was no nets in the goals.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just shoots through. I'm like, no, there's no league worth its salt that's going to have a player that's going to end up at Bramall Lane on trial that has no nets up. Like, what are you doing? Like, why wouldn't the production company just spring for a set of nets? Like, Jesus.
Well, I don't think that was by accident. I think they were trying to show, like,
the grittiness,
this is, where this guy came from. Like,
yeah.
He was playing on pitches that didn't even have nets in the goals. Imagine him making it all the way at 37 years old.
And he scores a penalty versus Manchester United.
My next thing here, major spoiler alert, just in case, I don't know, I feel like I should say that. This whole section is spoiler alerts. But when I'm watching a movie like this, JJ, you can tell, I think, within the first 3 minutes of a movie, if this is going to be the kind of movie where an important character dies.
Yeah,
and so I then spend the next few minutes observing the characters and trying to make my prediction as to who it will be. And
who's
I want to tell you, I nailed it. I effing nailed it. I said right away, brother, gone. And sure enough.
And his biggest inspiration, that was really corny and cheesy. You know, it's United. It's the Blades. You could be playing for them. Go get it. You know, like all that stuff.
Yeah. This movie and Goal, they are so frighteningly similar. It's almost like it's almost copyright infringement. Like, they're that similar, JJ.
Except, like, Sean Bean isn't Mexican.
Yeah. Like, but it's almost like, were they even trying to make it different? Like, I actually looked up to see if Goal was like a modernized remake. Like, you know how they do that with, like, you know, Star is Born. There's like five different versions where they keep updating it. Like, I really thought they were that similar. Like, the mean teammate, the unsupportive father, the younger brother who worships him, a family member's death to inspire the main character. Like, yeah. I mean, my God, it's really, really frighteningly similar. I loved one of my favorite scenes of the movie, the fight that his friends get in over Jimmy ordering a Coke instead of a beer was just hilarious to me. I just love it. Just like a desperate need to make it, to pound the audience over the head with the fact that this guy is A, the life of the party, and B, the leader of the group. That, like, his decision-making sets them off in that kind of way. It was just like, I just loved it.
Is there many more points here to go?
Yeah. So my next
one. Go to bed.
So here's my next one. So help me with this one, JJ. So Annie's pregnant, but the first thing she says to her friend when she's unable to tell Sean Bean that she's pregnant, the first thing she says to her is, "Let's go get a drink."
Yeah.
You're pregnant.
Again, the north of England in the mid 90s. If Annie wasn't having If she wasn't having a vodka Coke and a cigarette, I'd be shocked.
Another one I just love, that Ken Jackson, Pete Postlewaite.
What an actor, though. No, he is the diamond in the rough here.
He's great. But I love that he's still wearing his training suit at home.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that, like, it's like Homer Simpson or Peter Griffin. Like, that's just what he wears in every scene. Like, he's just going to be wearing that. He goes to sleep in it.
What did you think of their training montage where, like, you've got to take this serious?
And that, which brings me to my next point. JJ, it's the worst sports training montage I've ever seen. It's the worst one I've ever seen. It was horrible. It was so bad. It almost ruined the whole movie for me. And for however bad parts of this movie were, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun watch.
Yeah.
The training montage, I was just like, this is it. This is how he wins his way back into this guy's good graces. Like, Holy crap. And then finally,
by the way, can I ask you, I mean, you've watched so much soccer in the past 15 years. Does Sean Bean look the part? Not really.
No, no, not really. And then finally, this is actually like all these other ones are kind of like fun, silly critiques. Other than his age, I had a hard time getting past the fact that he was 37, getting a trial with a club, but whatever. This is a real critique. So, boy, like, he makes the team with no fanfare in this movie. Like, there's no, like, excitement around him finding out he makes the team. What happened there? Were scenes cut? Like, he was on the bench for the Arsenal game all of a sudden. That's a really big deal. Like, that. Like there's not even a part where he's, like, training with the reserves. He's on, like, you know, like, he's on the reserve team or whatever. No, like, he makes the team. He's on the bench. But, like, there's no scenes of anyone congratulating him for it or anything. Instead, he's just mad that he's not starting, that he didn't go, like, right into the starting 11. Like, that, to me, I was like, this is so, like, the whole movie's unrealistic, I guess. But, like, that part was such a removal from reality that I was like, okay, now this is actually affecting my enjoyment of this movie now.
Right.
That, like, he's pissed. This guy came from nothing. He's on the bench. That's not good enough. I'm not starting. What? Who the hell are you?
Agree.
That was one thing I was like, he's made the team. He's achieved, like, the whole movie is building up to this point of, like, everyone around him, you could be on the Sheffield United, like you said, United, Jimmy. But, like, he finally does it, and there's no fanfare.
It's
no
blades,
one even cares
you
or says anything. There's no
blades.
There's not a single scene of, like, him being hoisted up on his friend's shoulders or whatever. I was like, okay, this is actually weird. Something happened here. So that's it. That's my critique. It was a little bit harsh. I'm making it sound worse than it was. I enjoyed the movie. It was a fun watch. It was a fun
watch.
Which
is better, Rudy or When Saturday Comes?
Rudy.
Okay.
Before we close out, so what did your film industry friends say about why there aren't good soccer movies?
So this was from our friend, Jeff, and, Jeff joined us on Instagram, which, Caught Offside Pod on Instagram. Get over there and follow us and leave us a review on iTunes. We need more iTunes reviews. So let me just pull up what Jeff said. Hey guys, love the show as always, especially the chat about sports movies. As someone who works in film development, I can say football is particularly hard to translate to the screen. With so many players and no focal point, like a quarterback or a pitcher, it's more difficult to establish a singular narrative with a clear visual through line. Likewise, as simple as football is, its fluid nature and inherent flow simply don't play as well as a knockout punch or a buzzer beater. That being said, When Saturday Comes makes a decent effort. Can't say it aged well, and kind of feels like a bad Ken Loach film. Okay, that's fair. But so what? They can't all be Looking for Eric. Looking for Eric is the Ken Loach film about Eric Cantona and this guy who basically visualizes. He has hallucinations about Eric Cantona. And Cantona is in the film. Can't wait to hear Andrew's review. And thanks again for another great pod. You guys are the best. So thank you, Jeff. That was pretty much kind of my feeling about it too. Football's flow, the lack of a singular character. It's easy to do a quarterback movie. Easy.
But, like, yeah, I guess so. But I don't need my sports movie. Like, I'm kind of more in it for the story than I am, like, the action on the field. So, like, they should still be able to make, like, good stories around it.
Mm.
But they don't try, really.
No, they really
there's
don't.
There's another soccer movie that is up on Netflix now, Baggio, The Divine Ponytail. So I started watching it thinking it was a documentary about Roberto Baggio. It's not. It's a movie. It's an actual movie.
Oh,
it's not a documentary.
Is it?
So I shut it off because I wanted a documentary on.
Yeah,
Baggio.
I thought that one was going to be a documentary too.
It's not. It's a movie.
Oh,
about him.
Mm.
So I turned it off. But if somebody tells me no, give it a chance. It's awesome. Maybe I'll go back to it.
Yeah, I might do the same too.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there you go.
There we are. That was a good pod.
That's a pod right there.
That's a pod right there. We're rebranding, so you're going to see our brand pop up everywhere. Overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
The feedback's been great. Thank you so much, guys. Can't wait to get some merch out to you. So we're just planning that right now. And hopefully you'll be able to wear that merch, the new logo emblazoned upon your person, as opposed to two pasty faced big noses like us.
My nose is even bigger tonight. Luke headbutted me.
Did he Zidane you, or was
it was the kind of headbutt where, like, I was actually seeing stars, like, oof. I was Bugs Bunny or Elmer Fudd. It was like that.
This
child. You're crying, and like when you get hit in the nose in the right spot, and like you cry. It's just what you do. He did that to me tonight.
It is swelling.
It is. Yeah. I can't believe it didn't bleed. Yeah, we have to.
It's been a bad week for
work.
You. Really bad week.
Yeah, yeah. Although I went snow tubing over the weekend.
Saw the
I'm
video.
Just going to chase that feeling.
Saw the video. Absolutely wholesome content. And I actually was jealous. I because this is the first time I haven't sled since I moved to this country. There's always a point in winter I get to do it. And I haven't got to do it. So this cold weather that's outside right now, because it's quite cold and windy. Kind of hoping it blows in some snow so I can get one final shot at. Whee!
Yeah, we went to the Poconos over the weekend. And boy, it was so fun. Was such a wholesome weekend. We went to a trampoline place. Wee, 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 wee. Just bouncing, snow tubing. Just so wholesome. It's what I am now. Wholesome Andy.
Big nose, wholesome Andy.
Well, hey, this was once again, as I feel like I'm saying after all of these podcasts now, this was therapeutic as I get to talk through my angst and rage. I look forward to the weekend. More hot soccer action. Europa League action coming up later today, depending on when you're listening to this, which will be interesting. I'm very curious to see how Manchester United bounces back from that pasting they took over the weekend. We'll see. Maybe if this, honestly, we'll learn a little bit about the character of this team, I think.
We definitely
will. In moments like this. So I'm intrigued by that. This was fun. This was fun. JJ, I got nothing else. So in that case, to you, I say.
Check you later, snow tuber.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.